Welcome to today's San Juan Lechao Press Teleconference. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you all for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Jennifer Weiss.
Hi, everyone. This is Jennifer Weiss with the Climate Action Reserve. Thank you to all of you for joining this call today. We are extremely excited to share the story of the San Juan Lechao Forest Project, and we're also very appreciative to our guest speakers who we have joining us today. The layout for the call is that first we'll give an overview of the project to set the stage for the guest speakers. The guest speakers will then give brief opening statements, which will be followed by a panel discussion, and then we will open up the call for questions from the audience. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Gary Giroux, who is president of the Climate Action Reserve.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, and thanks to all of our partners on the phone, and in particular, thank you to all of you from the press who are participating here today. We're very excited to share with you the news that we have to announce, and very happy that you joined us. So thank you for your participation today. And today, really what we're talking about, as I was thinking about this announcement, is the power of partnerships. And here, the Climate Action Reserve, Pro Natura, whom you'll hear from, the community of San Juan Lechao, and Disney have all joined together to develop the first pilot forest project under the Climate Action Reserve's Mexico Forest Protocol. So it's great to have that kind of partnership. And I'll say that the Climate Action Reserve's Forest Protocol itself was a multi-year, multi-party collaborative effort that included government, businesses, nonprofits, and academics from both the United States and Mexico. And partnerships are important. Partnerships are how we get things done. But more important than the partnerships themselves is their purpose. And this one's purpose is particularly valuable, I think. It's really to demonstrate how activities that are taken to address global climate change can have a profound local effect. And we're going to talk about that today. So this project, this pilot project, is really a game changer in my mind for the Chitina, who are the native community in San Juan Lechao in Oaxaca in Mexico. The forests where this community resides and makes its livelihood includes cloud forests, pine and oak forests, and a variety of diverse ecosystems. And unfortunately, over time, these forests have been grazed and over-harvested by outside parties, and they've been in really poor condition, which has not only degraded the forest resource itself, but also the water quality in the community. This project is going to help provide a more resilient forest, cleaner water for the community, improved habitat, while also, and I think importantly, bringing real financial benefits to the community so they can not only improve their land, but they can improve their standard of living. And this is a collaboration, as I said, among nonprofit organizations, governments, businesses, and the local community, really to address global climate change. That's the purpose of the protocol that we at the Climate Action Reserve have promulgated and the mission and focus of our work at the Climate Action Reserve. But as you're going to hear, this also this project will provide real benefits to the local community. And it's these kind of international partnerships that will be the spotlight, I believe, at this year's UN Climate Change Conference in Lima, Peru, where there is increasing recognition that so-called subnational action, such as that taken by cities and states and regions, is an important and necessary component of a broader international agreement and a broader international commitment. We need all of the actors working together in the same direction if we're going to solve this serious threat of global climate change. So while we're waiting for for national governments to come together and take the broad action that they're going to take, hopefully by the UN Climate Conference next year in Paris. It's actions like these today that are going on, demonstrating that there can be real and positive benefits in the community and that we can actually address climate change on a broad scale. So I wanted to open with that and lay out the framework for the discussion today. As Jennifer indicated, we're going to ask each of the speakers to make a brief opening remark, and then I will follow up with a bit of a panel, moderated panel discussion. But we do want to leave plenty of time for all of you to ask questions as well. So I'm going to start the discussion here with Adolfo Alaniz, who is the executive director of ProNatura, the nonprofit organization in Mexico that has been our partner throughout this process and with whom we're very happy to be joined. And so with that, I give the floor to Adolfo.
Thank you very much, Gary. Hello, everyone. ProNatura is a non-governmental organization which mission is the conservation of the environment and its biodiversity and to promote sustainable development. Therefore, we are very happy to be part of this team, and the San Juan Lachao project has been doing a lot of things for the community. As you may be aware, this is a community of more than 4,900 persons, and they have committed to work on their land. They have committed more than 2,388 hectares of forest to be committed to the project. Part of the benefits that this project is going to deliver have to do with environmental, economic, and social benefits. As a transporter environmental initiative between Mexico and the United States, this is a great opportunity to work together and have this important project as a conservation tool and also bring these important benefits to the community, including the protection of forest areas, natural forest and pine and oak forests, and to promote sustainable forest management for the environmental standpoint. In connection with the economic benefits that this is going to deliver, we have the generation of jobs for indigenous communities, and the way this project helps to contribute to build this teamwork culture among the communities. The communities are very high committed to conservation, and I guess several social benefits, such as clean water supply in the community, will result in better life standards and improved habitat for this special community. I would like to comment that the project will be performed in five stages, that these stages involve many activities, such as training to get acquainted with CAR protocol, as well as to develop many field practices for the use and handle of equipment. And the community will also be part of this building capacity in the field practice for gathering and data and information. And there will be 300 sites that will be analyzed for the project area, and as well many other that I will be gathered for performing this project. So basically, I would close by saying that with this project, we will be very happy to continue to work with all the partnerships that are taking part of this project. And we hope that this benefits the communities that are forming part of this important initiative.
Thank you so much, Adolfo, for that. I really appreciate those comments, and I think it's particularly important the work that is going on and the level of training that's going on to ensure that the community can manage the forest in ways that are sustainable. I think next we want to turn to our partner from the corporate world, and we're very excited and happy to have Bob Antonopoulos of the Walt Disney Corporation here today. And I want to ask Bob to talk a bit about what the project means to Disney and why they chose to become involved.
Well, thanks, Gary. There are so many things that attracted us to this project. I don't even know where to begin. First and foremost for us is, we've learned over the years in doing the Disney Climate Solutions Fund since 2009 that, if we're going to curb climate change, you're going to have partnerships and, with business and communities and the private sector and government, and because these projects have a lot of moving pieces and they're very complex. And this project presented just fantastic opportunities for such collaboration. First of all, I was approached by Gary and the Climate Action Reserve initially with this project. Gary was aware of what we're doing here at Disney, and the Climate Action Reserve folks thought that we would like this project, and they were absolutely right. This project was kind of different than some of the other ones we had done elsewhere in the world. We were greatly attracted to the development of the Mexico Forest Protocol. Disney and other companies are very active with the state of California and AB 32, our climate greenhouse gas regulation here in California, our statute. And, protocols and offset projects are essential to reducing greenhouse gases around the world. You can't all be done at the facility, and the people who know these numbers can tell you how much of the greenhouse gas emissions are due to deforestation and forest degradation. So you have to have protocols, and you have to have projects like this. So the development of the Mexican Forest Protocol was really part of the attraction to this project. But, And the location of the project, right on our doorstep in Mexico. And this project has just a fantastic story to tell. We learned about cloud forests. Mexico has, according to data we have here, 1% of the world's cloud forests, and 20% of those are in and around San Juan Lachau, and they need to be protected, and I think Adolfo had already talked about some of the degradation, and Gary, that had been going on. The story, like I say, had a great story to tell. Gary and Adolfo have talked about the economic benefit to the local community, because in order to change how a community interacts and manages its forests and its lands, you have to kind of teach a new way, alter behavior, teach a new way to manage the forest, and as part of these projects, you get an economic benefit for the community, gets an economic benefit from managing its forest in a new way, and in a beneficial way, this project will increase access to clean water, provide an economic benefit to the community. And so when you look at all the moving pieces in this project, it was just a really, really attractive project for us. We've been lucky in the Disney Climate Solutions Fund to work with some great partners such as, Conservation International, the Climate Trust, Nature Conservancy, and now we can add Pro Natura to that list. And we've enjoyed our great partnerships with our partners in the environmental community, and this project allowed us, introduced us to yet another great one, and we look forward to working with Pro Natura on this project. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob, and we do appreciate the partnership with Disney, and hope to be able to continue those partnerships into the future. Appreciate those comments. I'm particularly honored at this point to be able to introduce the Mexican Consul General here in Los Angeles, Mr. Carlos Sada, to talk about the project and the importance of the project for cross-border initiatives and collaboration between Mexico and California. So with that, I give you Consul General Carlos Sada.
Thank you, Gary. I'm so delighted and pleased to be participating in this conference. because it is exactly what should be done, not only with the neighboring states or countries, but overall in this concert of nations, how to find ways of collaborating and how to find a project that have such a direct impact in the life of the people, in the life of the community, that is translated at the same time into an effect on what we are, everybody is worried, which is a climate change. And these last days we continue seeing the impact of climate change in the United States and all over the world. So I was very pleased to, when they went to Mexico a few months ago, a delegation with Governor Brown of California, to witness that one of the protocols that was signed was this memorandum of understanding to enhance cooperation on climate change and environment between the state of California and SEMARNAT, which is the Minister of Environmental and Natural Resources and the National Forestry Commission from Mexico. So this is another framework agreement and reference to continue working in this endeavor. And I think it is this project is going to have a very direct impact into the communities all over Mexico. I'm glad that this conference is going to take place tomorrow also there, and that SEMARNAT, it is the leader. I say hello to Adolfo Alaniz from ProNatura, from ProNatura, that they are really getting involved. I know ProNatura very well because I participated in my previous life, professional experiences with ProNatura in other projects. And more so I'm enthusiastic because I happen to be from the state of Oaxaca, and I happen to know all these little towns, including San Juan La Chao. San Juan La Chao is a prototype, I would say, of a community that has passed through different stages of problems, and that generates also the migration to the United States, and in particular, there is another link here, particular to California. Here in California, it is said that there are 300,000 or 400,000 people from Oaxaca, and a good number of them are from this area, this region that we're talking about, where San Juan La Chao is, which is between the coast and the sierra in the state of Oaxaca. And they immigrate because they have no income, and they have no alternatives, and they haven't really figured out how to get resources out of forests. Forest is a renewable product, and is something that if it is well thought and it is well understood, it is a permanent one. But there are some communities in the state of Oaxaca in particular that are already moving in that direction, and San Juan La Chao is one of them. And there is a very important additional ingredient to this project, which is the participation of the community. This is crucial and fundamental to respect what they think, to understand how they feel about their own forest. As you know, in Mexico, 60-70% of forest belongs to the communities. So it is them that have to participate. So this collaboration is unique. The corporate world with the Disney, non-profit organizations like Climate Action Reserve and ProNatura. So it's a perfect example of how things can be done when there is the intention of collaborating and when there is the intention of really rolling your sleeves and working with different actors. And I'm very optimistic that this could be continue being an example of how things, yes, can be done. So I'm thrilled, and I put it in the framework of the international collaboration, and more particularly so what is happening within California and Mexico, so that the visit of President Peña Nieto to California a couple of months ago, the visit of Governor Brown to Mexico 3 months ago, the visit of Mayor Garcetti to Mexico, have a consequence in the positive way, and this is a form of demonstrating that things can be done when there is the will to do so.
Great. Well,
Well, thank you for that, and it's always great to have a Joaquino right on the phone with us as we're talking about projects there. And I absolutely agree that these are the kinds of things that follow on from those sometimes ceremonial visits of government officials to Mexico. Actually, things do happen. There are results. There are actions that are taken, and this is an example of that. Finally, I want to introduce our, at the Climate Action Reserve, our Director of Forestry, John Nickerson, who's spearheaded the development of our domestic U.S. Forest Protocol and also the Mexico Forest Protocol. He's put his blood and his sweat and his tears and probably more into both of those. But we're very happy to have him on the call today to talk about the protocol itself and how we hope to see more projects follow this same path. So, John?
Thank you, Gary, and thank you for the introduction. You mentioned that there has been a lot of hard work. I would call it a labor of love. It's been a lot of fun as well along the way. We actually started our work in Mexico back in 2010, just the same way we start all of our protocol processes, with pulling together stakeholders that are involved in the sector. In Mexico, we had agencies, we had CONAFOR and SEMARNAT participating in our stakeholder meetings, we had landowners, and we had many nonprofits, and we were lucky that ProNatura decided to join us during those initial stakeholder meetings and throughout the process, because they have become a very we have a long-term relationship with them now. We also had another nonprofit that was involved in this, ECECO, with Carlos Perez. Carlos is from Oaxaca, and Carlos works very closely with ProNatura, and it's really the two of them that we hooked up with to work in San Juan Lachao, because Carlos Perez had knowledge of a community that was ready to engage. But a little bit more about the protocol. Our protocols are always developed with standardized approaches to developing the guidance so that projects can be developed with somewhat ease, in fact, to determine baselines for quantification, for verification, and permanence. We try to develop unambiguous guidance with our protocols so that two different projects will come together and develop the similar type of guidance. We are also developing a framework for projects to put their inventories into, so they don't have to develop their own inventory tools. We're developing that for them. And the key importance of that is that it's actually the community members in San Juan Lachao that are doing the work. We're not looking to pay outside consultants to come in and do the work. It's them. So it's creating an employment opportunity for them. And to help them get prepared for it, my partner in Mexico, Cecilia Simon, and ProNatura, and myself, we've been down to San Juan Lachao on various trips to perform trainings. Our first training dealt with just the issue of global warming. And we followed up with a training that was more detailed into some technical methods to put in plots, how to install forest measurement plots, how to measure trees, how to measure diameters and heights. And they just got finished putting in 300 plots within the project area in San Juan Lachao. And with Cecilia's interest and support, we're adding in some metrics for measuring biodiversity as well. One other key important feature of our protocol is that we have built-in safeguards for environmental and social safeguards. So the community has to go before its asamblea, the local governance group, to make sure that this is something that they want to do so they know what they're getting involved in. And it's been a process. And at this point, I would say that the community is very well organized and very motivated to develop this project. One of the key things with the protocol as well, one thing that I'm very proud to see with this project in particular, is the native species and how they're managing the forest, not only for carbon, but they're also managing it for sustainable timber production, and they're managing it in a way with diverse native species and mixed uneven age management. So it's a very exciting project, and I love going down there every chance I get. And we are looking forward to expanding our pilot program to other areas in Mexico.
Great. Well, thank you for that, John. And thanks to all of our panelists. As we indicated, I'm going to moderate a brief discussion here, and then we will open it up to questions from all of you. And I want to start first with the Consul General, and again appreciate his time and participation here today, and ask Consul General Sada if you could talk about how you see this kind of activity fitting into broader international efforts to address climate change, especially in light of the coming UN climate conference in Lima starting in the first week in December, and then, of course, the much-eyed COP21 climate action, conference of the parties in Paris next year.
Well, we are very pleased. As you know, Gary, Mexico has been playing a leading role in this issue of climate change, and we want to comply with our responsibilities worldwide. So since COP16 in Cancun, we've been very aggressive, proposing inclusive the Green Fund, and we have joined all the different protocols, and we are now very thrilled about this reducing emission from deforestation and degradation called Red Plus, in which Mexico is an actor. This is something that we are continuing, and one of the positions of the new government of Mexico with Mr. Peña Nieto is Mexico should be an actor with a global responsibility, and we are trying to comply with that because it has consequences not only for Mexico but from all over the world, and this is something that has not stopped at the borders. So we are very enthusiastic about going to Lima in a couple of weeks, and I think that we are well prepared, because the issue of deforestation or forest in Mexico, there is 2-3 million people that depend directly on the forest. And the more projects like the one we are talking in San Juan Machao is going to have an impact in all senses regarding Mexico. As you know, Mexico is one of the countries that has also a very big, huge biodiversity and ecosystems. So we are concerned that if we do not do something very practical and very down to the ground, the more time it passes, the worse is going to be happening. So we are not only thinking in this year in Lima, but next year in Paris, that all the countries are very much involved and propose very concrete projects, not only at the high level in the negotiations, the many nations that are very complicated, but also into finding ways to start straight away with the projects like this. That's why I take it as a very solid reference, this project of San Juan Lachao. But at the same time, Mexico has a very big agenda, and we are betting on the international cooperation in different fronts, and we hope that the results of Lima and the results of Paris are eventually going to have very direct consequences in different places in the world.
Great, thank you. And thank you for Mexico's leadership, for sure, in the international community. Mexico has been a tremendous driving force of the UN process and making sure that it continues on a path to get something done, starting probably before the Cancun conference, but certainly the Cancun conference being a demonstration of that, and Mexico itself adopting a climate change law for the country that is very aggressive. So we appreciate that. I want to turn next to Bob Antonopoulos with Disney. And Bob, in his remarks, mentioned California's Global Warming Solutions Act, AB 32, and his interest and work there. But it's clear that Disney doesn't have a big obligation under AB 32 directly. They're not a direct emitter like a power plant or a refinery. So I want to ask Bob to talk a little bit about how he thinks that companies like Disney use these kinds of climate change initiatives, why they get involved in them, and what kind of impacts they're expecting to have.
Okay. As Gary mentioned, we're not subject to California's AB 32 statute. We do have emissions, from boilers, et cetera, but they do not rise to the threshold that the law requires to be involved in that. We're certainly not on the same scale as, say, a utility plant or a refinery. So we're not subject to the law, but that didn't stop us, obviously. We think that, at Disney, we felt we had an obligation, irrespective of what AB 32 was going to require us, because that's only California and we're a worldwide corporation, to do something about our own greenhouse gas emissions and to encourage others to do the same. What this does is, we think the private sector, even if you're not subject to a compliance program, plays a vital role in advancing the cause of greenhouse gas emission reductions. And, in terms of, looking at your own operations, identifying those opportunities for energy efficiency, et cetera, and direct fuel reductions, and quantifying those, your emissions and the success of your mitigation measures, and telling that story encourages other companies to do the same. One of the things that we did here at Disney, and it's been very successful for us, is that we put an internal price on carbon of our own greenhouse gas emissions. The monies that we use to invest in projects of the Disney Climate Solutions Fund. To date, we've spent over $48 million on these types of projects, like in San Juan Lachao. We raise that money by charging our business units for their greenhouse gas emissions. It's a very powerful tool. It encouraged our business units to reduce their emissions because there was a direct quantitative benefit. We've talked about that in our various company reports, our corporate social responsibility reports, et cetera. And so when the private sector does something like that and tells its story, it encourages other companies to do the same. And I think one of the real critical things that a company like ours can do is these projects that in places like San Juan Lachao require seed funding, they require partnerships. And I think it's really important for the private sector to invest in projects like this. It's really important on a number of levels to show that these projects are successful, both in terms of benefiting the local economy and improving the management of the lands and forests in the local area, but also in showing our governments around the world that these projects are successful and that they do reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Because as the world contemplates greenhouse gas regulatory programs around the world and not just California, you're going to need to have, as part of these regulatory programs, these compliance programs, investment in projects like this. Can't get there from here. When in my opening remarks, I was talking about how Gary mentioned in the Climate Action Reserve about the Mexico Fortis Protocol. I would love to see that built into our California program and other regulatory programs. So we have to show that these protocols and these types of projects are successful, because once they're built into regulatory programs around the world, it will then invite investment, not just by the Disneys of the world who are doing it voluntarily, but by companies who need to comply with the regulations in their host country to invest in projects like this. Because so much, I don't know the exact number, I think it's around 20% of the greenhouse gas emission reductions comes from deforestation and degradation. So projects like the San Juan Lachao project or the Red Plus projects that the Consul General was referencing to are a critical element in achieving meaningful greenhouse gas emission reductions. So I think that's the role that companies like ours can play, and we've been doing it since 2009, and it's just really been a fantastic program for us, and we're real proud of what we've accomplished. Thanks.
Great. No, thank you, Bob, and thanks for Disney's leadership on this, and absolutely we agree, and in fact our model is that what we're doing here in voluntary markets really help inform future regulatory markets, and that's our goal as well. I want to conclude by asking our partner at Tonatora, Adolfo, and perhaps John can add in here as well, just to maybe finish with some more discussion and more specific discussion of the benefits to the community that you see coming out of this project and what that means for that community.
Well, thank you, this is Adolfo Lanis. Here we see several sort of benefits for the environmental standpoint. The main benefit will have to do with conservation of biodiversity, conservation of forests that provide environmental services that the community needs for living, such as water, soil, air, and so on. From the economic standpoint, 30 direct and 150 indirect jobs will be created. This will, of course, improve the life, the level of life that communities currently have. And mainly these sort of programs promote the teamwork between several organizations that share different experiences from different places. They will also be benefiting from learning how to work in a local scope, but in connection with global problems such as climate change. So mainly we see many things coming from this project, many good things coming, and we expect to keep working hard in developing and finding places where these sort of projects can be done. Of course, it has been an honor for us to work together with Disney, with CAR, and with all the local organizations such as ICICO, and the great work that Carlos Perez has been doing there with his team. And we see the community very happy with this new approach of how they are getting the relationship with their forests and how they can benefit from those forests and the services they provide, including the carbon offsets. Thank you.
Great. And John or Cecilia, anything you want to add on that point?
Did Cecilia make the call? I'm happy to add a little bit more. I kind of echo a lot of what Adolfo just said. I think that any time that we can add additional value to the forest, you know, through sustainable forest management and with carbon, the forest has a better chance of standing up against other opportunities. And we are really creating quite a framework for that to happen in San Juan Lachao. My own personal observations when I visit San Juan Lachao and work in the training center that they created for this project, you know, you see faces of young men and women that have, you know, they're very quick learners, they're eager to learn, they're getting a lot of technical expertise from the training that we've been providing, that ProNatura has been providing, and other groups have been providing, that will stay with them for a long time. A lot of these young men and women that are in San Juan Lachao have stories of working in the United States. And now they have stories about how proud they are with their work that they have right there in San Juan Lachao. And I think that in itself is a sign of success. So, yeah, we're seeing quite a trend there with a strong willingness to see this succeed and a lot of local pride.
That's great. That's a great way to end the panel discussion, and really inspiring to have that story told. So thank you for that, John. So with that, I'm going to turn the call back to the operator, who will open it up and provide instructions on how all of you may ask questions of all of us. So thank you all for your participation.
Thank you. And at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, press 0 followed by a 1 on your touchtone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press 0 followed by a 1 now, and please hold for a moment while our system compiles your responses. And While we are waiting for others to queue up, we do have a couple questions in queue already. The first comes from Caroline Wetzel from Bloomberg. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you could provide a little bit more detail. Was the number for jobs 3,900? And also, if you could sort of provide the acreage of the project, and if there was any sort of tally of the economic benefits in terms of dollars, could you provide a little bit more insight on that?
Well, this is Adolfo Lanit. Let me try to explain and clarify. Well, the income generation is for something around $15 per person per day. Considering that the minimum wage in the area is around $10 per day. So basically, if this project is providing a limited number of employees, but in a very important way in terms of an increase in the salary. That would be the first clarification. And the other one would be that they have been generating around 30 direct jobs and 150 related jobs, indirect jobs.
150 direct jobs?
30 direct jobs and okay. 150 indirect jobs.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks. And John, what about the size of this project and acreage?
Well, by the way, Cecilia just is Skyping me and letting me know that she is also on the call. I don't know if we can add her to the call. She's a great resource for this as well. You know, the community of San Juan Lachao is quite large, and I'm trying to remember, it's something like 50,000 hectares. Now, not all of that area is part of what we refer to as the activity area. All of it potentially could become part of the activity area where discrete activities are taking place to increase sequestration, and all of it is monitored for forest cover. But the actual area involved currently in the activity area is something like 5,000 hectares.
Okay. All right. And is there any... the overall cost of the project to the partners, is there a number for that?
That's one thing that we're working on right now is a financial analysis of the project, and we're also including in that financial analysis the timber harvest and sustainable timber harvest, and looking at ways that they can increase their local revenues by keeping some of those jobs local as well. It's going to... A little bit aside from the carbon effort, but it's related.
And what about the carbon reductions? Do you have a number for that? Or
yeah, well, you know, we have some current estimates for that. As I mentioned, they are just finishing up the 300 plots, and we will have better data about the expected sequestration once we analyze that data. I'd have to go to my notes, but I think that we're looking at, Cecilia, if you're on, you can help me here. I think I have to do some math here. We're looking at something like 20,000 tons per year for the project at this point.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question in queue comes from Greg Adonis from Ecosystem Marketplace. Please go ahead. Once again, Greg Donis, your line is live to ask your question.
Okay. This is Gloria Gonzalez from Ecosystem Marketplace. Can you hear me?
Yes, we might have had your name incorrect.
Yeah.
I apologize. Go ahead with your question.
Just curious if Bob could talk about Disney's participation in this project in terms of whether all the offsets would go to Disney, and what Disney's financial contribution would be to the project, to support the project.
Okay.
Okay. The way we do all of our with the Climate Solutions Fund, all our projects is that we help fund the project for future vintages, and we do receive the offsets that are registered. In this case, will be registered with the Climate Action Reserve. Other projects use the gold standard or a voluntary carbon standard, et cetera, and then they will be retired. So that's how we operate within the Climate Solutions Fund. So we do obtain the carbon credits, if you will, that are generated by the project, and then we do retire them. That's how that part's going to work.
Indeed. Just to follow up, what was it about this particular type of forestry project? Obviously, you've supported forestry, other types of forestry projects, but what was it about this one from a forest carbon perspective that you found attractive?
A number of things. That's a great question. Thank you. The project in Mexico was a great attraction. An improved forest management project that has an economic benefit to the local community was a real attraction. The development, a kind of a proof of concept for a new protocol, the Mexico Forest Protocol, that could be used in regulatory programs such as AB 32, was a huge attraction, because I think regulatory programs have to embrace and incorporate and endorse projects like this and RED projects around the world as part of their compliance program. You just can't do it all at the facility. And the partnerships that we'd be working with. I've known the Climate Action Reserve and Gary for a number of years, and when we met with the people from Pro Natura, when they came up to Burbank to introduce themselves, fantastic people with a clear vision and a great project that they introduced us to. So when you look at the entire package of this project, I remember the first meeting I had with Gary in my office. He goes, "I have a project which I think you're going to like." And Gary does his homework, and he was absolutely correct. We loved the project, and we were very enthusiastic about signing on to do it.
Indeed. And just for clarification, does this project have elements of both IFM and RED Plus, or is it strictly either or?
This is John. I'll respond to that. At this point, the project has IFM. Actually, it's flexible to include urban forest management as well as agroforestry. So generally, any kind of increase in sequestration is included here. In terms of RED Plus, we have worked to stay tuned in to Mexico's development with RED, and Mexico wants projects, but projects can only address sequestration. And ultimately, we're looking forward to how we might be able to nest this project to jurisdictional accounting that you'd find in RED. So we've developed it to be adaptable to Mexico's RED program as a nested project in the future.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And as a reminder to our participants, you may ask a question by pressing 01 on your phone's keypad. We have one more question in queue at this time. That comes from Dan McGraw from ICIS. Please go ahead.
This question might have already been answered, but can you talk a little bit about this this project and how it relates to RED and AB 32 directly, whether or not the program could eventually, or a program like this, could be translated over into the cap and trade program?
This is Gary, and I'll take that. So, as I think John indicated, we are being very careful and cognizant of Mexico's own RED programs, and so this is not specifically a RED project. We're not looking at avoiding emissions here, but this is really about enhancements to the forest and sequestration in the forest, so improved forest management largely. That said, I think there is, as you well know, within AB 32, within the cap and trade regulations, there are provisions allowing for the state of California to consider international credits on a sectoral basis, and they've indicated, and we certainly were part of the RED Offset Work Group that helped formulate the framework for how they might incorporate sectoral crediting within from outside of California, outside of the United States. There's also within the AB 32, within the cap and trade regulation, provisions that allow for ARB to adopt protocols from either Canada, the United States, or Mexico, and those do not have to be sectorally based. Those can be similar to the protocols that they've currently adopted for use domestically, and we see this protocol and this project kind of falling in between those two regulatory areas. This really is more akin to the kind of protocol we have operating today throughout the United States and that ARB has adopted. But it, as John indicated, we expect and hope that as Mexico's RED program steps up, that this is the kind of project activity that could be nested within that and allow for credit to flow through a jurisdictional RED program with this project nested within that jurisdictional program for recognition by the state. So we're looking for AB 32 recognition, not in the short term, of course, these things take time, but we certainly think that this is regulatory quality, and that's why we move forward with these kinds of pilot projects, is to demonstrate that that fact.
Thank you. At this time, that was our last question in queue. A final reminder to participants, you can ask a question by pressing 01 now. All right. Well, at this time, we do not have any further questions.
Great. Well, let me just then conclude by thanking all of our panelists here today, Adolfo Alaniz, Consul General Carlos Sada, Bob Antonopoulos, and John Nickerson for their participation. Thanks to Jennifer for organizing this event. And thanks to all of you in the press community for covering it. We look forward to continuing to talk about this and other projects in Mexico and appreciate all of your time and attention today. So with that, we'll conclude. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. Thanks, all of you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
And thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may disconnect.